changed. And
diversity.
You have caused confusion.
Oh, trash is spoiled.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Office Hours. It is on Monday this week, as opposed to Tuesday, because I'm off on holiday. That means there's no Deepest Lore, and I'll be away for a while. Although I have got lectures all this week and all next week as pre-prepared. That's how organized I am. And speaking of the lectures, I have been thinking about things, and I'm going to experiment with doing Office Hours basically on a non-news related topic. Namely, this week I'm going to take a question on Carl Schmidt. Then I'll do the super chats and the super thanks. If this goes reasonably well, we might do this every week. If not, I'll revert back to covering the news. I'm not actually that happy with making concessions to the slop, as it were. Because yes, it may be the case that initially it gets more views, but it's still making a concession in the wrong direction. And ultimately what we want to do is simply shed those people who come here for slop, just shed them. They can go and watch Tim Pool and replace them with people who come here for big brain activity. You know, that in my ultimate quest to be my best self, I think that is the best course of action. Whether it is viable or not, I am testing today. We shall see. Congratulations to England, of course, for defeating Mexico in the World Cup. That was very exciting. I did not stay up all night. I watched the highlights this morning. Not knowing who won, it was very exciting. So there's that. Also, today is the day that the summer sale is kicked off, ladies and gentlemen. It's promo code Scorcher. If you want to basically plan when I, you know, plan for my sales, right? Because a lot of people like to buy on the sales. I do the sales in unison with the Steam sale. So when the Steam sale has the summer sale, that's my cue to dust off promo code Scorcher. That's right, it's promo code Scorcher. I'll play it. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Carl Schmidt. It's the Academic Agency Summer Sale. Use the promo code Scorcher. 25% off all courses. Scorcher. Get it now. Scorcher. 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 Promo code Scorcher. 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 Buy it now. All right, so there was the thing that made me think about doing this stream was a very long message left on the Carl Schmidt lecture. Now the Carl Schmidt lecture's got, I think, 12,000 views, which is good, but it can still grow. And one of the things I'm getting used to, folks, is that having been on the kind of news cycle where you get most of your views in the first day or so, I'm getting used to these longer tails where, you know, I've released a video. I released the Mosca video and I thought, Mosca's flopped. Oh, no. But now that video's got, you know, it's approaching 20K and, you know, the videos are doing well, but they're taking longer to accrue their views, which you have to expect with evergreen educational content. What happens is that somebody watches one of those videos and then they'll probably binge a few different lectures, which is what they're designed for. And in my ideal case, as we go forward with this series, they're going to keep compounding to provide really quite a robust booster starter for people who want to think more seriously about the topics I talk about. Obviously, you can pick up courses at the Academic Agency if you want to, you know, get even further on the journey. Promo code Scorcher. But anyway, it was on the Carl Schmitt video. MG Smirk said the following, okay? And I'm going to give my best attempt to answer this question because it's, there's some valid and interesting questions. He says, "Hi, guys. I'm trying to engage with the topic of the video. I am not a scholar, so please no bullying if I'm misunderstanding anything. 2 to 3 questions. Number one," says Smirk, "what did Schmitt actually envision government looking like in ordinary life? I get the idea of the sovereign decides the exception, but that is about rare moments of crisis, the extreme. What does Schmittian government look like on a Tuesday morning? I know the point exists in and of itself, but I want to tie this in with his anti-liberal standpoint. If we remove the sovereignty of parliament, would it in some ways look like Burnham's managerialism? I suppose in the case of Burnham, the bureaucracy would be subservient to the managers who are sovereign. But I assume in a Schmittian state, the managers and bureaucrats would be subservient to and only exist to execute the will of the sovereign." And then he asked 2 other questions. Why don't we deal with this one first? Okay, so what is life in Carl Schmitt's ideal society going to look like, you know, on an average Tuesday morning, let's say? And what is the status of the managers, the bureaucracy, the kind of civil servant layer in Schmitt's state? Well, the first thing is to say that in normal times, you're right to say, Smirk is right to say, that Schmitt did not envision a constant crisis or dictatorship, okay? So the Schmittian exception is not, as is common, because Hitler basically followed, Schmitt is sometimes wrongly seen as advocating for like an absolute dictator. That's not what he's talking about. Because normal, like, you're not basically always in crisis, okay? You're not always in crisis. Normal legal order would still apply to most people, right? So everybody in society has to live by the law as it is written, okay? The point is that the government at any time can waive that in the name of sovereign rulership, okay? Not arbitrarily, okay? So Schmitt does not have in mind, for example, arbitrary corruption. And in fact, we saw an instance of what I would argue was arbitrary corruption in the World Cup. Funny enough, I mentioned the World Cup. Yesterday, an American player who is pretty important for Team USA, he was sent off in the last game. And, you know, in the normal circumstances, if a player is red carded, they miss their next game through suspension. Well, FIFA made this announcement saying that the player is, they're not going to overturn his red card, but they've taken the decision to suspend his suspension for a year. So he's going to have to serve the game suspension, but he's not going to have to do it the next game. Now, as far as I can tell, there's absolutely no reason for this whatsoever, other than the fact that America is hosting the World Cup and they are the home nation and this is a pretty important player to them. Okay. It is very arbitrary. Now, is this an instance of Schmittian decisionism, as somebody mentioned? Well, it has the same form of it. It is the sovereign deciding the exception, but are they doing it for legitimate reason? Like, is this just corruption at play? Okay. And Schmitt is not advocating for corrupt, arbitrary rulership in that way, where certain people are just getting favors because they know the right people or they're, you know, somebody's lent on them in the right way. That obviously is in the nature of tyranny, not in the nature of rulership that Schmitt had in mind. So that's the first thing, right? Normal laws are applying to most people in most times and places. And I'd imagine that Carl Schmitt would advocate for pretty robust anti corruption laws. Okay, so he would probably crack down pretty hard on that sort of thing. Okay, the laws would be administered, the courts would function as normal, bureaucracy would handle routine matters, okay, and daily life would proceed under the normal rules. For all intents and purposes, you don't even notice, okay? Everything's just running as normal. However, the structure and the spirit of the system would be very different, for example, than the constitutionalism of America, okay? So there is a strong personal executive at the top. This is the sovereign or the sovereign institution. Okay, this is in the Weimar Republic context. This was Article 48 used by the elected president. That was von Hindenburg. The sovereign is not just a ceremonial figure. He is not simply a manager of procedures. He embodies the political unity of the people, and he does have ultimate decision-making power. Okay, especially when norms of conflict or situations arise that written law did not anticipate. Okay, that written law did not anticipate. So this does not mean that the sovereign is getting, to use American parlance, to call audibles left, right, and center. Okay, to do like give perks to his mates or to, you know, pull this lever and that lever if somebody pays him enough. That's not what Schmidt had in mind. What he's got in mind is it's an emergency. The laws have not foreseen the situation arising. Okay? Things are usually meant to work like this, but there's been a colossal flood. What the hell are we going to do? There has to be somebody who can make a call in the moment. That is what is meant by the Smithian exception and the Smithian decision. He argued for decisionism over normative. Ism, right? So law is not, in the Schmidt's view, is not primarily a set of abstract general rules applied mechanically, which is the liberal ideal. Okay, liberals always want to mechanically apply the law. It is a concrete order tied to a concrete political situation and the will of the sovereign, the authority figure, the person who gets to decide the exception. The sovereign can interpret and apply law in light of existential needs, okay, for the political community, for the people overall. Bureaucrats and managers in this context exist to execute that will, not to deliberate or to balance the interests or to resist or to, you know, anything else. They exist to execute the will of the executive. They are a function of the sovereign will in Schmidt, the bureaucrat. The friend-enemy distinction, okay, means that there are no neutral institutions, there's no neutral administration, okay? But if you remember, the enemy in an ideal in the Schmittian state would be external. In effect, there would be very few internal enemies. Certainly, there would be no political internal enemy because there would be a harmony between the people and the rulers and between, you know, the ruling class and the people overall, because they were all on the same page. They're all working to the same end. So Tuesday morning, to come back to the question, you know, there are, so I'm trying to envisage it now, right? So you'd have like a set of clear national priorities, right? That he would foreground cultural cohesion. There would be ideological cohesion. So everybody would be on the same page. In a way, this has somewhat been achieved in China, where everybody has a sense of what the central mission is. And people who've been to China say that there is this kind of harmony there. Forgive me, I still have a bit of a cough. So, yeah, we have a cohesive cultural and ideological society, a clear set of national priorities that everybody knows about, and then a willingness to act, a willingness on the sovereign to act against the internal divisions or the external threats without being paralyzed by procedure, proceduralism, minority vetoes. Oh, what about this group? What about that group? In Schmidt's state, the sovereign would just come in over the top and say, no, it is in the interest of the overall to do this. We are taking this course of action. There shall be no more debate. There shall be no more wasting of time. We're doing it. And that's the end. Everybody get on board. Let's go. Society is oriented around unity and decision rather than pluralism in and of itself. Okay. Hopefully I haven't been muted with for the last 10 minutes. Okay, you can hear me. Press one if you can hear me, people. This is a little bit different from a normal normal stream, okay? So still on this question, he's asked two other questions, but I want to stick on this question. The bureaucracy and the managers are instruments, okay? They are literally there as executors, in the same way that in the world of trading, right? In the world of trading, there's such a thing as the buy side and the sell side. But in the world of trading, if you are a trading firm, you have to go through the investment bank. I've got a whole video on investment banks and their various functions. What are the functions of an investment bank? Is to execute the trade on the behalf of their clients, okay? So the order from the client comes through to the investment bank. It is not up to the investment bank to say, do you know what, that's a poor investment. Do you know what, I don't think that's in your interest. Do you know what, I think we're going to do something else. Do you know what? No, your job is to execute that trade as written by the buy side. You get a commission, a pip, they call it, for executing that trade. It is not your place as the executor of the order to go against the order. Okay, so that's the world. That's how it works in the world of trading. In the world of Carl Schmitt's hypothetical bureaucracy, the bureaucrat and the manager would be as the sell side is to the buy side. Okay, he is working on behalf of the client, in this case, the sovereign. He is there to execute that order, no questions asked. In much the same way as the private in the army does not question the captain's order, the bureaucrat does not question the sovereign's order. Okay, because it's all meant to be working in a harmony and unison. You can't have that if the bureaucrat has got ideas of his own. And we've seen where this can actually function in practice in the other way. When Donald Trump was the American president, the first time around, he's had less resistance the second time around, I would argue. But the first time around, there were many members of the bureaucracy, of the permanent bureaucracy in Washington, that simply would not execute Trump's orders. He was sending orders down and they just weren't doing it. The kind of passive resistance at the bureaucratic layer. Well, this is a problem. This is like clogging up the arteries. And Schmidt was argue that this is a bad thing, right? He did not like the American style system of checks and balances, and he did not like the idea of a bureaucracy that kind of had a mind to its own power. This is where you're right to pick up on this slight difference between Burnham and Schmidt, but you have to remember Burnham was talking about the American state and the Soviet state and the German state as it actually was, whereas Schmidt, in the case of like thinking about his ideal, is talking about like how things ought to be in a way, right? The Schmittian exception is how things are, but he, like Schmitt, I would say, does have a kind of an ideal state of play that he advocated for as well. Okay. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question. Second question from this guy, and let me just clear my throat a second. Hold on. Oh, sorry, folks. I've got to clear my throat here. Give me. I'm going to play another ad a second. Give me one minute. Oh dear.
Now from the academic agency.
All right, so we're back. Sorry about that. I had a bit of an emergency. So judging by the numbers, by the way, right? Judging by the numbers, clearly a large contingent of the crowd, the slop munching crowd, did not want to come to talk about Carl Schmitt. So I will have to assess to see how this stream goes while I'm away. We may want to think about, though, us, the, you know, the, let's say there are usually 1,000, you know, maybe 1,500 people who watch this most weeks. Let's just pretend that the 300 that are left here are the organized minority. And the slop mongers, the snuffling pigs who usually turn up, are the disorganized mass. Maybe the 300 here could be like, well, we make a decision just permanently to say we don't want them coming around anymore because this is the stream we want. Or not. We shall see. Let's see what happens. Anyway. Second question from this smirk fellow before we get to the super chats and super thanks. Smirk says, when it comes to deciding the exception again, I understand Schmitt is being descriptive and not being moralistic or making no assumption that the sovereign is wise. But this isn't this where it all gets dangerous in practice? AA listed various examples of leaders of different government configurations using emergency powers. But I like to focus on what a Schmittian government would look like as opposed to what he was critiquing. Say the sovereign is incompetent, the leadership is bad or ideologically captured, or tries to drag the country and its people into an unnecessary war. Again, not limited to this form of government, but asking with this in mind, are there any guardrails? Parliament and its mutations, even if there is no true opposition like the Uniparty, are known for being ambling or limping or not being very efficient as opposed to pure executive function. But in a lot of ways, it's like that by design. Other times, it's not. But I think it's safe to say that liberal democracy governments are in a lot of ways about keeping things stable or keeping things the same as opposed to drastic changes, even in existential scenarios. This is also what Schmitt was critiquing when he said liberalism neutralizes politics. What if we go to the other extreme? What if the sovereign keeps declaring emergencies? What is stopping them from saying everything is an emergency? A good example would be we are always at war with Eurasia. Would that mean permanent emergency rule? Or what if the sovereign, as we see with so many governments, only exists to serve itself instead of the populace? And then he says, in a way, these are simpleton arguments, like, what if the leader is bad? And again, I know Schmitt is descriptive, and no, I'm not necessarily defending liberal democracy, but I see arguments in reaction to liberal democracy as opposed to being their designed government configuration. I'm sure Schmitt explained this, I just don't know what to look at. I'm not calling him stupid, ha-ha. He was obviously extremely intelligent. So I think these are valid questions from Smirk. I don't think they're simpleton questions. I think they're perfectly valid to ask. And I will have a stab at giving you an answer. I think you're right, basically, to press on this. It is a danger in what Schmidt is talking about. And it's worth noting, as I do in The Populist Delusion, buy it now, that America has been in a constant state of emergency since 1917. The emergency powers enacted by Woodrow Wilson to take America into World War I have never been rescinded. Emergency powers are on the books from JFK, from LBJ, from Ronald Reagan, from Jimmy Carter. Every president basically has emergency or executive orders that were enacted that were never rescinded. And in fact, American Constitution fans will love to point out that many executive orders which have never been rescinded have then been used as an edifice to build law upon. So there are things that were never passed through Congress as they were meant to. They were passed by executive order, which now have Supreme Court precedents built on top of the executive order. There are entire departments, right? Federal departments, institutions, buildings that exist purely on the basis of the executive order that has never been rescinded. Now, this would be an area of interest, I would suggest, for a Schmittian lawyer, right? For an expert in Schmitt. And also, it's something worth questioning for Schmitt himself. It's like, well, okay, this has happened in America. What's stopping this happening in your state, Carl Schmitt? So he was explicitly descriptive. As you said, he was explicitly realist. He was not moralistic. He was not utopian. He did not assume that the sovereign would be wise or benevolent or competent. Okay, I remember he was writing with President von Hindenburg in mind, who was an old veteran who was arguably not any of those things. Okay, but he was talking with this person in mind and his use of Article 48. He accepted that politics involves risk. That power always includes the possibility of making the wrong call, of making bad decisions. And this is part of why lots of people think of Carl Schmitt as being quote-unquote dangerous, right? Dangerous, quote-unquote. But did this mean that Schmitt was against what you might call guardrails or checks and balances. Okay, he believed that sovereignty is absolute in the same sense as Thomas Hobbes or Joseph de Maistre, that the sovereign cannot be fully domesticated by norms, okay, without losing its essence. The ultimate guardrail in the Schmittian framework is success and then building legitimacy on that success. All right, think of, we've been talking about football. Think of a football manager who appears to have a Midas touch, okay? Think, for example, of the legacy of Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United. Now, Alex Ferguson made lots of mistakes during his time in charge. He took over in the 80s. Okay, he made lots of calls, lots of mistakes, but he had a huge amount of success. And he won the league year after year after year after year after year. Okay, and he won the European Cup and he built and rebuilt teams. And every time he made a call, like selling Roy Keane, like selling David Beckham, like replacing his double winning side of 92-93. Okay, every time he made a call like that, there were critics who said, oh, maybe Fergie's at his time, maybe he doesn't know what he's doing anymore. But yet he came in quids in again and he won again. Every time Alex Ferguson won, his legitimacy was increased. His sovereign power within Manchester United was increased. he kind of built up an aura, if you want, of being the man. Okay. Now let us pretend that Alex Ferguson did not do that, that he kept on making these calls and he kept on failing. Well, what would happen to Sir Alex Ferguson? He would have been fired in 1997. He would have been fired in 2001. He wouldn't have had the legacy because he would have been a goner. And that is basically the framework that Schmidt is using here. It is legacy and legitimacy based on performance and based on success. If you're not making the right calls, you're basically not going to last. is his basic way of doing it, as opposed to the liberal system that tries to neutralize politics, right? It tries to neutralize politics, and it never gets anything done. It just never gets anything done. Okay, we might want to think about. I mean, what would the equivalent be? Right. Imagine rather than Sir Alex Ferguson, which is the Schmittian model, right? He's a successful example of a Schmittian model. Instead, let's pretend there was a football club that was run by committee. Okay. And year on year on year, the fans are saying, oh, look, there's a real problem here with, we haven't got the right solution in midfield or whatever they're arguing about all the time. And year on year on year, the club manages to do enough not to get relegated, right? But they never win anything either. They never get relegated. They never win anything. They kind of hover around 15th in the league. But the long-term problems that people point to are never actually fixed, okay? You could say, well, the club is stable. The club's not going anywhere, right? But it's also like not winning. It's also not achieving results. It's not delivering what the fans want. And for Schmidt, the various quote-unquote guardrails of liberal democracy create a situation like that where, you know, you don't get the violent revolution, okay? That's democracy. Like, you don't get that happening. Although he would argue that if the friend-enemy distinction is unchecked for too long, you will get the violent revolution. But to your point, yes, democracy stabilizes, okay? But it also kicks the can down the road. Decisions are, you know, put off. People don't want to make the call. Solutions are not arrived at. Nothing ever gets done. The club never wins the league. So this is I hope that's answered the question. Does it mean, right, that Schmidt's way is not paved with danger? No, it doesn't. He would say that you've got to take the risks, that there's no reward without, like, ultimately someone has to make the call. And just as a football manager lives and dies by his decisions, so too does the sovereign live and die by his decisions. We can't escape that because it is the nature of power and politics, argues Schmidt. Liberalism is the desire to escape the political. Liberalism is the desire to neutralize politics, to pretend that other things can replace politics, like process, like procedure, like, oh, the committee, oh, we're going to do a report on it. What that actually means is that you're just delaying the decision further. You're kicking the can down the road. You're absolving yourself of taking responsibility for making the call. In Schmidt's system, the sovereign who made the decision to, I don't know, let's say, let in 10 million people into Britain, foreign people into Britain, between the years of 2010 and 2026, simply would not, like, that the sovereign who made that sort of decision, he wouldn't be around anymore. He would have been replaced with the sort of sovereign who's not going to make those sort of decisions anymore. Whereas in the liberal democracy, due to its various tricks, all the people who made that come about are either still there now, or they've not faced any consequences for their actions. They've not taken any responsibility for it, or they face no accountability for it, because it's seen as being almost the system tries to strip the politics out of it. And this is where Tony Blair is such an interesting figure to study, because he embodies so much of what Schmitt is talking about by putting his politics beyond politics. This is where liberalism is always trying to go. The point Schmitt is trying to make is that liberalism is not actually escaping politics. It is just doing a kind of glorified delay tactic, staving off the inevitable, and in a way making things worse by not solving the problem. So he accepts the risk that you describe, Smirk, but he'd say that these risks are inherent to politics. That's like, you, there is no politics without decision, and there is no decision without the risk of making a mistake. All forms of government have dangers. Liberal democracy can slide into paralysis, into gridlock, into elite capture. Okay, Schmittian systems, yes, can slide into personal despotism, autocracy, permanent emergency, these sorts of things. But I would argue that the liberal democracy has also slid into those things. Like, we have been in a state of permanent emergency in Britain and in America, arguably since the world wars. Yes, we've seen despotism. Yes, we've seen elements of autocracy, well, that are cleverly kind of eluded or hidden by the mystifications of the system. That's what I would say. And that, you know, at the moment, that a lot of the birds are coming home to roost in real time. And the longer the liberal democracy fails to deal with its issues, the more dangerous the situation becomes. Whereas if we'd had pure Schmittian decisionism, somebody would have sorted out those problems long ago. It would never have been allowed to get that, you know, to be that far gone. To come back to the difference between Sir Alex Ferguson making the decisions and the committee, right? If it was left up to a Manchester United committee, they would have never sold Roy Keane. They would have never sold David Beckham. They would have tried to do everything they could to hold on to Cristiano Ronaldo and all the other things that Ferguson did. And yet, it was the decisions that Ferguson took which made, you know, Manchester United win or lose, ride or die. Ultimately, all organizations are like that, must be like that. And the committee decision, the trying to weasel behind, you know, faceless bureaucracies and so on, doesn't actually escape the consequences of taking bad decisions. I hope this makes sense to you, Smirk. Schmitt believes that liberalism's particular danger, the neutralization of decisive political action through procedure or discussion and so on, was especially fatal when you were faced with an existential moment. Okay, he was not promising a risk-free utopia. He was arguing that some form of decisive sovereignty is absolutely unavoidable, not just in politics, in all of life, in any organization. Anybody who's run a business, anybody who's been part of an organization, knows that ultimately the buck has to stop with someone, and that someone has to make a call. If he's a strong leader, he'll make a strong call. If he's a weak leader, he listened to the committee or whatever. Okay? But there's still no escaping the decision. The hour of decision is upon us, as Spengler would say. There's no escaping it. And, you know, my favorite example of seeing this in action, is actually in the world of pro wrestling, okay? All through pro wrestling history, there was an NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, had a committee. Okay, the a confederation of regional promoters. Whereas over in New York, certain Vince McMahon was an absolute dictator of WWF. Okay, after he took the company from his father, an absolute dictator who man managed the company within an inch of its life. He was a control freak. Who won? Was it Vince or was it the committee? It was Vince. When Ted Turner bought WCW, WCW did not learn from history by, Ted Turner, because he knew nothing about wrestling, was like, well, how am I going to run this wrestling company, WCW? And the story of WCW is the story of committees, of rival egos, of, you know, oh, we're going to put Ric Flair on the committee with Ole Anderson and this dude and that dude. And it was a mess, right? WCW was always a mess because the buck didn't stop with any one person, because there was so much conniving interpersonal politics, because there was this committee and that committee and sign off from this office and that office. So a lot of mistakes were made. Okay, the wrestlers were given way too much power as a result of the kind of bureaucracy inherent of Turner, Time Warner Company, AOL Time Warner as it became. Okay, it was all a mess. As against over in New York, there was one boss, Vince McMahon. The buck stopped with him. If he said you're fired, you bet your bottom dollar you were fired. If he said it's time for you to retire, Randy Savage, on your bike, son. If he said, oh, actually, Hulk Hogan, you know, there's a better deal across the road from Florida, you're going to go over there for a while because I've made my money from you now. I'm going to have to go a new direction. What decisions he made lots of mistakes in his time in charge, Vince McMahon. Lots and lots of mistakes, but the calls were his and his alone, and everybody knew they were his. Whereas you can go in the history of WCW and you'll see whose fault was it? Whose fault was it with Crockett Promotions went under? Was it Dusty Rhodes' fault? Was it Ric Flair's fault? Was it this dude's fault? Was it that pizza guy's fault? Was it Jim Herd's fault? Everybody blaming each other, everybody passing the buck. Versus it was Vince's call and Vince alone. And so when Vince wins, WrestleMania is a massive success and it's on him. When he loses, that was his call and it's on him. You get it? This is the difference. So that's the world of pro wrestling, but so in pro wrestling, so in politics, so in life. That's what Carl Schmitt is talking about. He's saying you can't get away from it. In a way, the dream of WCW was the dream of liberalism, right? But look at the disaster it caused. Look at the mess it caused. Anyway, I shall continue. Bottom line to smirk. Yes, there are risks, but that is part and parcel of what being a leader is. And Schmidt would say, like, what is this, like, liberal cowardice, basically? What is this? Why is everybody scared of making a call? You're not scared to make the call. Like, everybody understands it in the context of pro wrestling. So why not in the context of your nation or of your government? Liberalism hates that idea. Liberalism is all about the committee, the report, it's all about trying to ward against this. What Schmidt is saying is that try as it might, liberalism will always fail because the truth of power is the truth of power. It will always fail because its goal to neutralize politics is fundamentally utopian. Power is always decisionist. power is always in the manner of the Vince McMahon. Anyway, hopefully you've enjoyed this, people. There are 400 of you now, so more of you. Let us get to some super thanks and some super chats. I don't see any super chats today, which should make life a lot easier. It means we'll be able to get out of here super quickly. Speaking of pro wrestling, maybe if this is over in an hour, I could call it the Power Hour. I could change the name of Office Hours to Power Hour. Some people will remember WCW Power Hour as hosted by Jim Ross. anyway, a number of super thanks. Patrick Finn has simply said thanks on the Mosca video. Well, thank you very much, sir. Normal Mouse on the Schmidt video says, I had a question I hope you could answer for me. Now that you've done away with Twitter, what will happen to the Deeper Store streams? Well, they're still there. I think I answered that last week, did I? No. The Deepest Lore streams are still there. They've all got Simon Roberts' face on the thumbnail. And if you click on the video, you will see the number is given in the description of the video, Normal Mouse. So Deepest Lore has not gone gone anywhere. Why are these all out of order? Oh, here we are. They're in proper order now. On last week's Deepest Lore, Holy Spatula says, AA, you should play this before riding your tiger video, before you're riding the tiger video. Oddly, of all the sad slop, Blamblasses really made me want to ride the tiger the most. He is right about the lot, but he has the energy of someone who saves Scrubs Football Manager. He wants to win the FA Cup with Plymouth Albion in its first season. Anything less is game over, restart. okay. Trent says, this is a super chat on Cigar Stream 169, Green Capitalism. Now, that is an ancient video, Trent, and it's behind the paywall. But he simply says, thanks. Well, thank you very much, sir. And then we have the Normal Mouse one. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, unless I've missed anything, that is it for Super Thanks. Oh my goodness, could this be the shortest Office Hours of all time? The Goblin Raid. Oh no, Broman Hank has come in last minute with a super chat. He says, how would you remove the sovereign in Schmidt's ideal state? And would you consider a video on Max Weber for the series? On the second question, I will consider Max Weber, but he is not a priority as things stand. I'm kind of like, so generally the thinkers I'm trying to cover are a little bit lesser known, like Morris Cowling. I'm told that it's not Maurice Cowling, it's Morris, because an actual student of Cowling's, someone who studied under Cowling at Petersham, said, well, I met him, I knew him, and his name was Morris, not Maurice. I was like, okay, that is pretty cool. Pretty cool. So I either want lesser known people like Cowling or underappreciated sorts of people, people who very much talk about applied everyday things. Now, Max Weber is pretty well known, I would argue, and foundational in sociology, but he is quite applied. So he ticks one of my two boxes. So there's a good chance that I will get to Weber eventually. Where I'm not going to go, or where I don't want to go as things stand, is to pure philosophy. Right? I don't want to do videos on like Schopenhauer and Nietzsche and, you know, Plato and Aristotle and so on, which is pure philosophy, if I can help it. But we will see. We will see how I feel and how the series goes. I want to talk about people like, I did a video this morning on George Sorel. I want to talk about Christopher Lash. I want to talk about I mean, there's lots of, I mean, I talk about Walter Lippmann. You know, these are the sorts of characters that I'm foregrounding in the series. They tend to be people who are kind of writing outside the academy in a way. So anyway, this is not to say there won't be a Max Weber video. Maybe one day there will be. Max Rocky Tanky says, loving your Great Thinker series and elevating the above the average rightoid, elevating the average rightoid above the slop. I would love a video on Sam Francis and Louis Althusser. Althusser has a video that is forthcoming. They're vaguely themed, the weeks. This week is vaguely themed around conservative thinkers. So we've got Cowling was today. We've got Oakeshott, Michael Oakeshott, Thomas Sowell and Peter Hitchens. That's this week. Okay. Next week, I'm doing all about mass communication, mass propaganda, mass brainwashing. And that's where we're going to talk about Walter Lippmann, Edward Bernays, Louis Althusser, and who else am I talking about? Gustave Le Bon. I cannot wait for next week. Le Bon, Lippmann, Bernays, Althusser. Only on this channel, friends, and I am excited about that week. So I'm generally putting people together in vaguely themed groups like this that make sense, at least to me. And hopefully once the videos are done, they'll make sense to you. Francis will get a, you know, maybe I'll come back to Francis at some later time. I don't see why not. I haven't made a video on Burnham yet. Burnham, Francis and Paul Gottfried, as well as Bertrand de Juvenel. I mean, that could easily be a week down the line, you know, the rest of the populist delusion authors. Maybe I'll get to them at some point. All right. If that is it, everybody, have a good time with your summer. Enjoy my series of great thinkers. I'll be back next week, hopefully. Maybe on Tuesday, if not, definitely on Wednesday for Deepest Law. No Deepest Law this week. There will be Deepest Law next week. Simon Roberts, if you watch this, you'll be very pleased to hear that I want to take the politics slop out of Deepest Law as well and return that show to its pure roots of analysing Curto and coming up with interesting philosophical content. The de-slopification will continue until morale improves. I have made my decision. Have you made yours? Have you made your decision for Christ? Let's get out of here, guys. It's hot. Oh, no! Reese Harrison with a last-minute super chat. He says, listening to you talk about how China is a quasi-Schmittian state makes me think of the claim that Liu Zhaofeng has led Schmitt into the Chinese canon. Is there any truth to this claim? I imagine there's a lot of truth to this claim. I think that modern day China is quite a Schmittian state. You can take that to the bank. Lots of the principles of Carl Schmitt are of the state that he wanted to see are being embodied currently by China. Okay, thank you for the super chat. I can take it on the chin that you ruined my dramatic exit. But now, in the words of Shakespeare, exunt, exunt. We are out of here. Goodbye.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.